Blog Talk Radio.
The Clown Time is also on the podcast called The Clown Hour. I'm your host, Scott Burks. You can find our blog on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. That's clown with a K, by the way. You can find us on Facebook at the same name. Just do a search for The Clown Times, and you'll be able to find us there. This is a very special podcast this evening. We are pleased to have the author of Move the Ball, which I found to be a very good book. It's really helped me personally, and we'll get to that in a moment. But on the line is the author of Move the Ball. Her name is Shelby A. Garrett. Jen, welcome to the Clown Hour.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure for you to be on here. Thank you for joining us. First of all, I hate to say this, but you're my first author to have the interview on the show, so I'm a little nervous, but I'm also excited at the same time. There's many ways that I want to angle this to take with this podcast. You know, you have an amazing story, you have an excellent book here. I'm trying not to give too much away of you, but because I want people to buy your book and at least have the pleasure of reading it as I have. But first of all, let's just start off with telling the folks who you are and where you're from and whatnot.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so my name is Jennifer Garrett. I grew up in Chicago, and that's where I first fell in love with football as a kid, living in Chicago. I currently live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, so I'm still a Midwesterner and will always be a Midwesterner at heart.
Yeah, and and basically, you said you're from Chicago. I remember early in the book you talked about, actually the first page or so, you talked about going to a Bears game, you know, to the Bears championship game against Green Bay a few years ago, and surviving what was like horrific conditions to do so. Now, I thought I was a diehard Steelers fan, like a fan of a team, but you have taken it to a whole new level. I am quite envious of that, and you know, to a point where you actually were held onto what you call the oh shit handle in the passenger side. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, for those of us who don't know, what is the oh shit handle? For those who do not know.
It's the handle that you grip at above the window on your car when you're riding along with someone and you're afraid that they're going to break too hard and you might get in an accident, so you grab that oh shit handle just as an extra measure of you know, safety, or you feel safer anyway because you're gripping onto this handle in the car.
You know, because I was thinking, I was picturing you guys like, I'm not down your friend's driving wheel, but swerving down the freeway in the ice I think it was ice out, and you just like, you know, hold on to dear life, like thinking, I got to make the football game, I got to make the championship game, and just having your life flash before your eyes. I mean, that is total badass on your part. I just wanted to just get that out of the way and just commend you for sticking it out like that. But needless to say, I was afraid for you reading that passage. I'm thinking, damn. No, it's good that you came out okay. But what had led you to becoming a motivational speaking life coach? Because, you know, looking at your background, I find it quite compelling in a good way, in the sense that you were were dealt all sorts of obstacles, and yet you've overcome them and become the person you are today. So just give us all an idea of what led you to become a motivational speaker.
Sure. I've always been internally driven, and I've never accepted kind of what was put in front of me as an obstacle or a limitation. I know you know my background. I have 5 college degrees. But, you know, I didn't start off life as a normal kid in terms of, you know, graduating from high school, doing college, getting a job. I was 17 when I had my first child. I was in college already when I had him, but I was a single parent. I had one of my friends, and I write about this in the book, one of my good friends told me he didn't think I would graduate college, and, you know, that hurt, but I don't accept, you know, those limitations. Like, okay, well, I appreciate your opinion, but I'm going to keep going because this is what I want to do in my life, and I'm going to see it through until I get it done. And the reason why I wanted to be a motivational speaker and a life coach is because I really enjoy connecting with other people and helping them follow their dreams. I really believe no matter what the obstacles you have in your life, you can find a way. It might not happen as quickly as you would like, but you can find a way to reach your dreams if you just keep pushing forward and keep moving the ball.
You know what? I've read about your degrees in the book and everything. I just still am awed at the fact that you're able to get 5 degrees. one being an engineering degree and another being a law degree. And having to juggle all those things, you know, taking your kids to, you know, you mentioned in the book, to, you know, football practices, what is it, cheerleading, and whatnot, recitals, I guess. And you were able, and I'm going to stress this again, 5 degrees, one of them being a law degree. I'm thinking, how in the hell was she able to do all this without pulling out her hair out? And losing her brain cells in the process. That is impressive, beyond impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't take all the credit myself. I mean, obviously, I've done these accomplishments, but it wasn't only me that was out there. Mm-hmm. In the book, I talk about the importance of having a team. And, you know, most of the things in my life I couldn't do if I didn't have my family, I didn't have my coworkers, my teammates, really there to help me kind of see things through. So, yeah, I've done a number of things, but it isn't just because of me. And so it's really important, you know, for everybody in whatever endeavors you're looking at achieving, you need to have a support structure in place to help you get there. And I've been very fortunate to have that through different things that I've pursued in my life.
Yeah, and I must say you have, because you mentioned your parents have been great in supporting your endeavors and helping, such as helping to watch after your, you know, your kids while you're studying or going to class at night while you work during the day. You know, a lot of people do not have that, are not even blessed to be in that position. And yet, fortunately for you, you were able to have that important, like, the support structure. So props to your parents for helping you with that, because a lot of them would not help. I was telling you this from experience, you know. Because I'm related to some cousins who were teenage parents, and some were lucky enough to have at least one parent to help them, but often others would, you know, they would just have to fend for themselves and just do it on their own. So I'm glad that you had that support, and I'm glad that you're able to leap forward those obstacles to get in check. Now, what I did like is the fact that, you know, from your book is that you actually used as a metaphor the game of football as the game of life. For those of us who love football know how, or at least have an idea how hard it is to drive, to sustain the drive to get into the end zone, let alone kick a field goal, you know. And that you use that as a metaphor to helping folks to attain their goals. I know that, you know, it wasn't my work to draw the correlation, and it was enough for me to understand. But, you know, because football is the ultimate team sport. Could you think, I guess, football is harder to reach your goals of scoring than it is in baseball, like where it's pretty much like it's all strategy. You know, I'm thinking from the devil advocate's point of view. You know, would baseball be a decent enough analogy as well? Maybe hockey as well, or you know, or basically, you know, it's pretty much like a straight-up football guy and decided to go with that.
Yeah, so I think that everybody can learn lessons from any sport, especially team sports, right? You learn leadership and teamwork from any sport that's out there, be it baseball or hockey or basketball or football.
Right.
So I definitely think there's analogies in any of them. I grew up watching football. I follow basketball and hockey, and I'm a Blackhawks fan, so I'm pretty excited after yesterday's game. But for me, just watching football, I really connected with it. And, you know, one of the things that I really learned as a kid watching the game is no matter how far behind your opponent you might be, you can still pull off the win. And I've watched the Chicago Bears come back from 20-point deficits in the fourth quarter, you know, to pull off a win. Same thing with the Blackhawks yesterday. You know, they were down 3-1 in the series against the Red Wings. They came back.
Right.
They didn't say, you know what, this is it. You know, there's no way we're going to make this. And, you know, it really goes to show you, if you play with heart and you believe and you have the discipline and the dedication, you can, you know, achieve anything. And so football taught me that. The Blackhawks proved it again last night with their win. So for me, football has been a really big part of my life. And a lot of the things, a lot of the principles that I've learned and that I've used to be successful in my life, I came from watching the game, or they came from watching the game.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that Bears game that came for 20 points down. That was the Cleveland game, wasn't it?
You know, I've watched many Bears games where they've come back, so I wasn't really thinking of one in particular.
Oh, no, that's fine. go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of one, you know, just one specific game, because, I mean, it's happened many times over the years. And it's not just the Bears. I mean, you know, there's lots of football teams that have come back from huge deficits to pull off a victory.
Right. Well, the thing is, the reason why I thought the Cleveland game, since I, you know, I'm a Steelers fan, so I hate Cleveland, and the Cowboys as well, by the way. And I remember watching the last half of that game because, you know, during that year, Cleveland and Pittsburgh were like tied for first in the AFC North, and I of course needed Cleveland to lose, you know, for obvious reasons other than, you know, first place, you know, on the line. But at the same time, I do remember turning away from the game thinking, you know, oh, shit, this is over. Cleveland's going to just stay in first place with us. And then going back, I remember going back to, I guess it was CBS game, but I turned to ESPN for the wrap-up show. And long story short, when I saw the final score and how it all happened with the highlights, my jaw just literally dropped. I mean, I was happy to tell that Cleveland choked the game away, but I was like, wow, came from 20 points down to win in the last minute. That's pretty damn impressive. I was jumping from joy to joy. And, you know, when you mentioned your Blackhawks last night, another person I immediately thought of was Mike Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, because he was all worried when the Blackhawks were down 3-1, and he was saying, you know, you could tell the angst in his voice. He was trying to be objective, but you could tell that, well, a couple of things. He really loves his Blackhawks and he really hates the Red Wings. So, needless to say, I guess there are at least two other people who are happy about that score. And quite frankly, I'm actually looking forward to the Blackhawks to get back to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. So that's just me. So at any rate, so there are many directions I want to go, like, you know, with this book, you know, like I said, I don't want to give too much of away because I want people to buy a book. So I'm going to hit some highlights for a minute. I want to start in chapter 7, where we discuss the importance of keeping your ego in check. And, you know, from reading that chapter, you know, the importance of staying humble, the importance of humility while still working hard and still trying to attain your goals. you know, before I ran across the names, I merely thought of Terrell Owens, Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, or whatever the hell he's called himself these days, and Randy Moss amongst guys who divas, who had huge sizable egos, but were not able to control themselves to actually keep it in the context of helping the team attain their goal, helping them attain their goals. So how would you, like, in going through Chapter 7, you know, when you discuss that, go into detail how that would have helped Terrell Owens, Chad Johnson, Randy Moss, according to what you wrote in Chapter 7.
Yeah, so Randy Moss, Chad Johnson, Terrell Owens are they're all talented guys, right? All great wide receivers who have done great things, you know, in their football career. All, you know, multi-time Pro Bowler, Terrell Owens 6-time Pro Bowler, Randy Moss 7-time Pro Bowler. So, I mean, these are guys that have done great things, right? And they've proven their talent on the field. But it's not only about talent in football games, as well as off the field in your personal life. You could be the most talented person on the planet, but if your attitude is not in the right place, and that's what this chapter is about, then that talent is only going to get you so far. You know, in the NFL, you've got a tremendous amount of talent outside of those three athletes, right? You've got Peyton Manning, for example, very talented quarterback. Adrian Peterson, very talented running back. But you don't see them flaunting and exhibiting these, you know, superstardom type tendencies. Very humble. They focus on the game. They focus on teamwork. It's about the team. They're committed to working as a team, and it's not about showboating and, you know, just showing off their talent. And so that's what this chapter really talks about is, you know, that's great to have talent, but there's a way you need to conduct yourself both when it's game time and when it's not, you know, to be able to move forward. You need your team to be successful. We've talked about that a little bit already. And, you know, your teammates are going to support you if they respect you and they think that, you know, you are with them and that you really have a genuine, you know, love for whatever it is that you guys are committed to doing, whether it's winning a football game or achieving some personal goal. And if you don't have that appropriate attitude, you know, your teammates are going to leave one by one. They're not going to be committed. They're not going to be with you. They're not going to want to help you succeed. And then also, there's other people that might offer you opportunities. So when you're in the NFL, for example, you've got a contract. That contract, you know, can get terminated. It expires. You could be a free agent. If you're a free agent, you want someone else to pick you up, right? And if you don't have the right attitude, well, who wants you? You know, there's plenty of talented guys. So if I've got, you know, someone that's talented and humble and a team player, and I've got another person that's equally as talented with a superstar diva, well, who am I going to pick? And there's some other considerations, but all other things equal, you're going to want to pick the person that is generally a better team player. Same thing happens off the field in our personal lives. You know, when we're working in the corporate environment, when we're competing for a new job or a promotion, there are people that observe our behaviors, and they form impressions based upon those behaviors, whether we're in the workplace or outside of the workplace. So you really got to make sure that you are acting appropriate, you know, in all settings of life. And so that's where these three talented athletes failed is, you know, they've got the talent, but they failed to recognize the need to be humble. They need to be a class act. They need to really embrace the importance of teamwork and focusing on the team versus focusing on themselves.
Well said. Well, let me turn around right quick and just say, you know, as a quarterback, you know, we're all the quarterbacks in our own lives. And this is going to speak to your managerial background. Say, like, if you have a team, you're trying to get in the right direction in terms of team goals, whether it be increased sales or increased notoriety, and you have a person on your squad who tends to is diva-like or insecure, pretty much along the lines of those three clowns we mentioned earlier, Terrell Owens, Chad Johnson, Randy Moss, how would you, the quarterback, be able to rein in or get those guys to, quote-unquote, buy in, to get them to be with you.
Sure. Well,
not
I
lose your mind at the same time.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, I want to make sure they're committed to being on the team and are committed to whatever the vision is, whether increasing sales or whatever it is. So if they're not, then that's the first conversation that takes place, is understanding their perspective, why they're not committed, or in figuring that out. Once we're aligned as a team and they're on board with what our goal is, if there's still issues because you're a diva or a superstar, then it's really about making them understand that this is a team effort. You know, I work for General Electric. I've also worked for Boeing, both very good companies that promote leadership, and it's about achieving results, exhibiting proper leadership qualities, and not just achieving results at all costs. And so, you know, I want to make sure that this team member understands the behaviors that's expected of people that are on my team. And, you know, if they're not able to conform to what we think are the appropriate behaviors and appropriate teamwork qualities, then maybe it's time for us to make a change and have that person, you know, work in a different group. Obviously, if they're a talented person, I'm going to want to work with them and see. Sometimes people aren't aware. Not everyone knows how they come across to other people, so it's important as a leader to coach that person and give them feedback. I've been in situations where that was just the case, where the person was a great person, wasn't aware of how they were coming across to their teammates, and once we had those candid conversations, I saw tremendous change in the way they operated. So that's kind of how I would handle those types of situations.
Well, you know, one of the things that I, you know, just to piggyback on what you just said, what I appreciate about managers, whether it's the places where I worked in the past or what have you, is that those could be potentially very uncomfortable conversations. You know what I mean? In the sense that, you know, you want the person to stay on your side, but you want to be, quote, unquote, real with that person, in the sense that, you know, you're trying to kind of gauge your interest, but at the same time not try to alienate that person. It's kind of like a fine line you got to walk, don't you think, in that, and trying to make sure you both of you are on the same sheet of music, so to speak?
Absolutely, it is, and I think a good leader knows how to do that, and it comes with experience, it comes with practice. But you have to be able to create an environment where you feel like you can have those honest conversations, as difficult as they might be. If the person respects you, then obviously it's easier to have those conversations. And I think as a leader, it's very important to make sure that the people on your team have respect for you. Now, in the business world, right, I've worked with people that don't personally like me for whatever reason, and it's not a popularity contest, but they respect me. And so I really want to emphasize the respect part. You know, we might have differences in our personal views, but we respect one another. So we can have those conversations, and, you know, we're committed to winning, you know, whatever that goal is. And so it's easy for us to have those dialogues, even when they're uncomfortable. And that takes time and practice to do, but I think a good leader works to make that happen. And that's part of that chapter in Check Your Ego is, never thinking you're good enough. Even as the leader, you need to continually assess what are your weaknesses and gaps, what do you need to improve upon, so that way you can connect with the other people on your team.
Well said, well said. And speaking, and this is an interesting segue, I don't know if you intentionally meant to do this or not, but when you talked about people who worked for you who didn't like you for whatever reason, I want to go to chapter 10 for a minute, which I consider one of my most compelling chapters in the book, and it's actually my favorite, because you actually talk about, actually the title of the chapter is Preparing for the Blitz, right? It's like, you know, pretty much what to do to prepare to recognize the blitz, actually. And you, and basically you talked about what happened to you during your experience at Boeing, where the blitz occurred, where it pretty much knocked you on your keister, so to speak. And almost prevents you from moving on to the next goals in your life. So, and you could take all the time you want, but I found this interesting. But talk about what happened at Boeing, where in preparing against the blitz, where the blitz actually knocked you down temporarily.
Okay. Yeah. So I was in an engineering management role at Boeing, and because of the great things that my team and I had done in that role, I was provided an opportunity within another part of the business. I came to that part of the business. I was 29 at the time, so I was fairly young to be in that position at Boeing. Most of my peers were mid-40s, 50s, and most of the folks that worked for me were 15, 20 years older than me. Some of them ex-military, retired 20 years in the Marine Corps, for example, or the Air Force, and they didn't really accept me coming into such a senior role because I came from a different part of the business. So I wasn't, you know, promoted from within that organization. And I made the mistake of thinking that because I had all of these accomplishments under my belt, people would just immediately appreciate that. They would recognize that talent and say, okay, this is great. You know, this person's going to lead our team. And by working with me, I thought, well, they'll see that I'm a hard worker, that I'm easy to get along with, a good leader, and things will work out great. That didn't quite happen. And I was very naive. You know, I just thought that people would come to like me and come to respect me. And it didn't matter that I was 20 years younger than them. So I wasn't prepared for what was on the field with me. And in this book, I talk about recognizing the blitz. I equate you to the quarterback. You've got people on your offense who are on your team, but there's also the defense on the field. And there are people that will intentionally try to stop you from moving forward. And those are who I consider people that are going to run a blitz on you. And so in my work example, I was not thinking that someone would try to do that to me. It happens in the workplace. As much as we don't like to think people would try to sabotage someone, it does happen. And in the book, I talk about this story where not only did my teammates do that, but I also had a boss that was out to run a blitz. And, you know, through the story, I talk about how this event occurred. She ended up knowing about the event. And instead of advising me, as a manager should advise you if there might be a problem, she waited, filed a complaint against me, and I was suspended from work.
Wow.
And to know
that's
that
fucked up, but go ahead.
it is. And, I mean, it was such an act of betrayal. It took me years to tell that story without crying or getting teary-eyed because it really hurt that somebody could be that mean and, you know, just betray the ultimate trust you've put in somebody by doing that. So for me, that was a real eye-opener, you know, to know that there are people that could be that cruel out there. You know, that job was, I will say that that job was a very hard job for me in terms of understanding the people dynamic. And so I tell people that was the worst job I had, not only because of that incident. There are a lot of other things that took place, but it was also the best job that I ever had. And the reason I say it was the best job was because I learned so much about myself. I learned so much about other people, and I became a better leader because I was put through that process. And so, you know, I truly believe that the test of a true leader is when they're going through adversity and challenges, not when everything is going great. And so I grew so much as a person and as, you know, a corporate employee by going through that experience. And as painful as those 3 years were, I would never trade it for the world because I learned so much from it.
And that's the important thing, you know, learning from the toughest experience in life. Because I remember when I was employed at a database firm, this was like early in my career, you know, there were forces where, you know, some people didn't like me being there. You know, for whatever reason, I'm not going to attribute it to race or what have you. But, you know, for some reason, they just didn't like me there. And in the end, basically, long story short, 11 months later, I was out of a job. And, you know, I made two mistakes, the same mistakes that you detailed in this chapter. You know, mistake number one being don't assume anyone would care that you were great or anyone would immediately like you. That was very naive, you know, because I was green. You know, it was early in my career. And I assumed that, hey, if I work hard, everyone would like and respect me. But that was obviously not the case. And the second mistake that you mentioned here that I also made was don't assume that people are moral. You know, it's one of those, it's one of those sad facts, you know, like the saying goes, it is what it is. You know, people are people, and, you know, it's got, I guess you got to take it on roll with it, I guess, and just try to do the best you can when that boom, quote, blitz occurs, I suppose.
That I mentioned too in the book is a recurring theme is you can't control how other people will respond to things, but you can control how you respond to those incidents. So, you know, it is an unfortunate fact of life that people can be that way, but you don't have to settle for that, and you control what you do as a result of their actions.
Exactly. Now, this chapter that, another chapter that stuck out to me for different reasons is in chapter 22, you discuss how maintaining a healthy diet is essential to meeting your goals. You know, I read how it was, you know, how that could be the case, but I guess I'm still having trouble reconciling that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, like for example, how could like having a healthy diet help me to attain reaching to another, like maybe a different, like maybe climb up the corporate ladder, or you know, find that different that other job that pays well. I mean, it's obvious how it could be essential if you're an athlete, that you eloquently pointed out in the book. But still, how can that could be, amongst other things, help you to attain your goal for us working folks out here?
Great question. So in my book and on my website, I have a newsletter that I talk about called Between the Cleats. And the slogan of that newsletter is realizing your dream starts with you. It starts between the cleats. And so in whatever goal you're pursuing, whether it's an athletic one or a corporate goal, you are in the driver's seat. You are in control. In order to be able to do that, you have to be on your A game. To be on your A game, you have to be healthy, and part of being healthy is having a healthy diet, getting enough sleep. So, you know, just because you're not training for a marathon doesn't mean I can eat pizza and drink soda all day, right? I mean, you need to make sure you're taking care of your body, taking care of your mind. In the book, I talk about superfoods that are good for your brain. There's been lots of research out there that talks about keeping your brain active and challenging your brain. And you need to do that to be able to move forward in life. And one of the reasons for that is because in my book I talk about you need to think out of the box. Be creative. Find the way to get your goals no matter what circumstances you're facing. In order to do that, your mind has got to be sharp. One of the ways your mind gets sharp is by eating healthy, taking care of it. Sleeping is also an important piece that I talk about in the book, not necessarily in that chapter, but in another chapter, because you need to have your body and your mind and your inner being healthy if you want to progress forward. Life is a tough game. You know, if it were easy, we'd all be great. We'd all have lots of money, and, you know, none of us would ever complain.
Right.
Not like that. And so
that's
how I try to diet to it, is that, you know, it's just a part of the game. You've got to condition yourself and eating. I don't tell you what to eat specifically. I mean, there's lots of, you know, studies on what the right diet mix is, and I'm not an expert in diet. I'm not a dietitian, and so I'm not telling you what to eat. But, you know, there are certain guidelines that the Department of Health and Agriculture puts out, for example, the food pyramid. So, you know, making sure that you're not overeating fatty foods, you know, making sure you're watching your cholesterol intake, just general healthy practices are important.
Right. Especially old folks like me who never had to care about calorie intake, cholesterol levels, sugar levels. You know, I was always the guy with the high metabolism, and now I'm approaching 40 in a few months. You know, it's stuff that I never had to care about before. I have to think about. So, as much as I miss not having the occasional Krispy Kreme donut, you know, growing up in North Carolina, like, you know, that's all you have down there, are Krispy Kreme donuts. So I could easily snort down a baker's dozen, and not skip a beat. I just have to really, really watch myself these days. So it's a tough struggle, but I'm trying the best I can. I want to just make a quick comment to you. I feel that the book resonated with me a lot in the sense that I'm trying to do a new, embarking on a new endeavor in life, you know. During the day, I'm a database administrator for the government, for the federal government, but at night, I'm a sports blogger. And I want to go into a different direction in my life where, you know, I figure I've been playing it safe for too long in my life, so I wanted to be daring, you know, and take a chance and take risk and just move the ball in my own life, you know. So I the touchdown in my life would be to grow this, what I'm doing with the sports blog and the podcast, to something much bigger. And so basically, you know, in addition to speaking with you, you know, you're the first person I spoke with on a podcast who I didn't really know personally. So basically what I'm trying to say is I'm going way outside my comfort zone with this, way outside, way into the gray area. But I must say it's been very exciting so far. And I've been doing this for like maybe the last couple of months. And I must say, in reading your book has really inspired me some more to take the next few steps to get the first downs, to get the big chunk gains, if you will, in order to keep scoring in life. So thank you for writing the book, at least from my perspective, because it's helping me. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that it's made an impact on you. And I would just say, you have one life, so do what makes you happy. And, you're not going to just make a jump tomorrow and say goodbye job. You know, I'm just going to write and sports blog all day. But what you have a goal, right? So now it's about figuring out what's in your playbook and then executing that playbook so that you can move the ball forward and transition to do more of that, which you really love. So I know that you can do it. And I would just say stick with it, and it's going to be a roller coaster ride at times, and you'll question, you know, is this the right thing for me? But, you know, have the courage to keep going, and, you know, all of us inside get nervous, right, with uncertainty. But if it's something you really love, then I would say, you know, push through that fear and keep going and keep moving the ball.
Great, and I appreciate that. One more thing. You're a bit bigger, sir, obviously. And early, like a few podcasts ago, I had a buddy of mine to discuss how it's bears to do as one of the super fan series that I have going up to training camp. So he gave his own assessment of the Bears. But give me your assessment of the Bears. How do you think that they'll do this year?
Well, the Bears have made some changes, right? I mean, we have Mark Trestman now as head coach. We've made some changes like we do every year with players. For me, the big thing, so Trestman came from the CFL, right? By nature of the CFL,
right,
you've got three downs to get a first down instead of four. So it's more of a passing game.
Right.
People that follow the Bears, or even if you don't follow the Bears and just know them, typically we're not an offensive scoring team, which is a problem. So we've got to work on our offense. But, you know, one of the biggest things that's important is O-line protection. And if your O-line can't protect your quarterback, then, you know, you're not going to be able to make those key plays and, you know, move that ball and get into the end zone as an offensive team. Our defense has been very successful at, you know, stripping the ball away, interceptions, running back for a touchdown, which is great, but your offense needs to score too. And so I think when Jay Cutler came to the Bears a few years ago, I had a lot of doubt with him, you know, poor decision making, 9-step drops. It wasn't pretty his first season. Over the last few years, I've really seen him mature. I've seen his decision making get better. His accuracy is better. But it's not all his fault because he doesn't have an O-line that protects him like a quarterback should be protected. So I think that is first and foremost the most important thing that needs to be worked on is protecting your quarterback. The other thing that I think is important is, you know, Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler were together in Denver. They're together in Chicago now. They had a great season last year, but Cutler passes mostly to Brandon Marshall. defense is Mildes. So he's got to mix it up. You know? And so I think that's another thing is, you know, leaning on your other wide receivers or, you know, tight ends to move the ball as well. But, yeah, I'm hopeful for the Bears. The NFC North is, you know, a tough division with the Packers. So will we take the NFC North championship? I think it's possible. If we don't, I'd certainly like us to have a wild card. See, because I think the team is capable of getting into the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and plus, you know, second week of the season, your boys will be at my boys, so that should be good.
Yeah.
I got Pittsburgh week two. So I'm sure we'll be both on Twitter just needling each other a little bit about that game. One last thing. Of course, right? So be prepared for some hassling, and I guess I should prepare myself from hassling from you. So it's all good. So tell the people where that they could buy your book at.
Okay. Right now it's available on Amazon.com. It's available on BarnesandNoble.com. And then I also have a website, www.jenniferagarrett.com, where you can also pick up the book.
Great. Awesome. Jen, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure interviewing you, and it's a great book. Once again, move the ball, folks. Please buy the book. Jennifer Garrett, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. That was Jennifer Garrett, author of Move the Ball. Please buy the book. It's an amazing book. Even for the people who don't like to read, it's very straightforward, and especially if you love football as much as I do. You will enjoy at least appreciate how the game of football applies to the game of life. So please go and buy the book. But until next time, this has been the Clown Hour. I really enjoyed it. I hope you all enjoyed it too. Found it entertaining. And I'm out of time. And until next time.